Yet another event to mark the 40th anniversary of the Woodstock Music Festival is director Ang Lee's new film, Taking Woodstock. Set in White Lake and Bethel, New York, it's based on a 2006 memoir by Elliot Tiber, who had a front row seat, not at the concert itself, but at negotiations that led up to it. Film critic David Edelstein has this review.
Ang Lee's last film was called Lust, Caution, which is an apt description of the play in all his work between yielding to messy feeling and exercising discipline, holding back. He's among the last directors I'd think of for a movie about the 1969 Woodstock Festival, which was, at least in the popular imagination, all yielding and no holding back. But it's easy to see why Elliot Tiber's temperate memoir, Taking Woodstock, caught his fancy. Tiber, born Teichberg, was a closeted young gay man, an heir to a seedy, debt-ridden Catskills motel. When the proposed festival was expelled from several small New York towns, whose elders feared a glut of filthy, nasty hippies, Tiber saw an opportunity and contacted its planners. He found them a spot at Max Yazger's nearby farm. His parents' motel became a planning hub. And, well, by the time Joni Mitchell got to Woodstock, they were all stardust and golden. Lee and his producer and screenwriter, James Shamus, have made a film that's gentle and rather tepid. It's pleasant, but over its 2+ hours, it doesn't build up much counterculture fervor. Lee always seems like a visitor to whatever milieu he's depicting, ancient China, the Old West, the hippy-dippy 60s, and he brings a cool, cerebral eye to a setting that cries out for the hustle of a Robert Altman movie. Most of the emotional weight in Taking Woodstock is on transactions, like this one for motel rooms, between Dimitri Martin as Tiber and Jonathan Groff as organizer Michael Lang, in a vest with no shirt, looking like a scrubbed hippie Adonis from a stock company production of Godspell.
You know, we're going to need a place for people to crash while we prepare the festival. Your place looks pretty cool. How many vacant rooms do you have for the next couple of weeks?
Well, it depends on how you define room.
You know, how many people can crash with you? What do you guys charge?
Let's see. It's $8 a night, but that can be for doubles. And we give a weekly discount, of course. Plus the cabins, Fish. You can get cots. So 4 people per, about 150, I'd say. You can get about 200 people.
Hey, man, let's make it easy. Why don't we just buy the Elmonico out for the season? Just figure out the costs, write it down, we'll take a look. And if we don't use all the rooms, you can rent out the free ones. We need to keep some cleanup crews around afterwards, and if you got some bigger spaces for offices, that kind of thing, we need to put in some phones and have some space to park vehicles. You know where we're going?
Mm-hmm. Part, but by no means all, the problem with Taking Woodstock is Dimitri Martin. On his Comedy Central show, he's a deadpan genius, dropping one-liners that seem to come from the dark side of the moon, yet illuminate everything. But the part of Elliot Tiber taps nothing except his bland ingenuousness, and he ends up a dull bystander. In his memoir, Tiber doesn't have a sparkling personality either, but early chapters detail the pain of being in the closet and reveal he was at the Stonewall Bar in Greenwich Village the night of the police raid. Imagine throwing rocks at police at Stonewall and then grooving at Woodstock. You'll have to imagine. There's no hint of that side of Tiber on screen. The other characters leave you just as indifferent. Even Emil Hirsch as a traumatized Vietnam vet, and Liev Schreiber as a giant transvestite named Vilma, who becomes the motel's director of security. Schreiber goes against the grain and plays Vilma straight and matter-of-fact. But the movie needs more loopiness, more risk-taking. Well, there is one vivid performance, the British actress Imelda Staunton, fresh from her turn as Harry Potter's most sadistic instructor, as Tiber's monstrous, penny-pinching, Jewish hysteric of a matriarch. Watching Staunton's high-pitched, Yiddish-accented rants, you don't know where to look. She's amazing and awful. Her stylized performance is in a different key than anyone else's. The experience of Woodstock inspired Tiber to leave his parents and embrace his sexuality. But on screen, it's studied, as if the director were an android reproducing transcendence without experiencing it. There is one evocative moment when Tiber hears the first stirrings of the concert through the trees, thrilling yet ghostly. but the show itself is never glimpsed. Sure, Tiber was busy at the motel, and the filmmakers couldn't afford $500,000 extras, but seeing nothing is a bummer, man. The sheer scale of Woodstock is central to its place in history. The movie ends with motel leave-takings and an allusion to the groovy next fest at Altamont. What a cynical way to cap things off. Taking Woodstock is a celebration that feels like a dirge.
David Edelstein is film critic for New York Magazine. You can download podcasts of our show at freshair.npr.org. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our engineer is Fred Snyder, with additional engineering support from Joyce Lieberman and Julian Hertzfeld. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Roberta Shorrock directs the show. For Terry Gross, I'm Dave Davies.